Hello and welcome to the Indian Dream Podcast. I'm your host, Siddharth Betala, and we have another episode lined up for you after a long, long wait. I took a bit of a break over the last few months to understand how I wanted to build the Indian Dream and have exciting plans for it that I'm going to be sharing over the next few weeks. But for now, let's talk about today's episode. If you're a pet lover, you're going to absolutely love this episode. We're going to be talking to Varun Sudhana, the founder of Supertails, and we're going to be discussing the pet care industry in India. The pandemic impacted all kinds of businesses, some positively, some negatively. The pet care industry was an industry that benefited significantly from the pandemic as more and more people decided to bring in pets while they were in the confines of their homes during the lockdown. Let me give you some numbers to help you understand how large the market is. Currently, there are 30 million pets in this country, growing at 11% annually. So as you can see, it's a large and growing market. And over the last few years, big players like Nestle and Emami have entered this market because of its potential. Along with them, a few new age tech-first startups have also entered this market over the last couple of years. One such leading player is Supertails, which operates an e-commerce platform for pet foods and supplies and also operates a telehealth consultation services focused on pets. As you can see, they're attacking the majority of their market with their offerings. Founded in early 2021 by three co-founders, Varun, Vineet and Aman, Supertails is on track to achieve 100 crores in annual revenue run rate over the next few months. Varun himself has had a very interesting career. His first startup failed back in 2007. Then he went on to study at IIM Lucknow and work at Snapdeal for a few years. After that, he was the COO and co-founder at Licious, which is a large D2C player in the meat supply space. And he quit that to start Supertails. So that was an interesting decision in itself, and we're going to be talking about that as well. Apart from that, we're going to be talking about the value chain and the unit economics of this industry, the potential for India to become an export superpower in the pet care industry. And lastly, we're going to be talking about the importance of embracing failure as an entrepreneur. All right, with that, let's jump onto the episode. Wait, before we jump onto the episode, please hit the subscribe button. We have a bunch of interesting things planned for you in the next few months and you're going to love it. So please hit the subscribe button. And with that, let's finally talk to Varun about Supertails. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. You've had a fantastic journey with Snapdeal, co-founder at Licious, and now running Supertails. What I want to do for our conversation is start at Supertails. I want to understand how you decided to get into Supertails, given the fact that you were already in a pretty, you know, leadership position, co-founder at Licious, doing really well during pandemic, and you decide to quit that and do Supertails. So the idea obviously has to be very exciting for you to do that. But what was the thought process? What was the thesis when you started Supertails?
Yeah, and it's amazing because it's always the elephant in the room. Man, kya nahi choda kyun yaar? Matlab koi reason nahi tha, right? And that's true, right? Probably, actually, most definitely the most difficult decision that all three of us have ever taken in our life. But yeah, there's always a background. And for me, it's a little bit longer story, but that definitely starts back in 2011 when I got my first cat. I've had three dogs before that, and I, you know, we knew how to manage dogs. My wife had quite a few dogs before that. But with one fine day, we decided to have a cat, right? And interestingly, North Indians and living in Bangalore, having a cat, no clue karna kya hai, right? Those didn't. I didn't have friends who kind of were new. So even at that time, it was a struggle for the first couple of years, right? Suddenly the cat started purring and we were like, there's something wrong with this cat. We got to get an exchange, right? But they don't come with an Amazon policy, right? The fundamental that there was a lot of, there was no information was definitely a gap that we encountered back then as well. But this was quite early in the career as well. Never did I think he pet care mein banda banana hai us samay, right? Things started to mature back in 2017 for the first time. Both Vineet and I know Vineet for a long time. We've been to the B school together. He was a senior of mine actually. And we worked together for quite a few years post that as well. And when we were coming out, we were just looking at what are the places we should kind of probably build a business, right? And both of us are quite suckers for first principle thinking. Academic concept, right? which keep peeling the onion. And what we understood was, right? A blank paper, GDP, it was like known fact that nothing is going to change. So let's write down all the facts that exist, right? So GDP was increasing, fertility rate was decreasing. So there's a lot more money that people have. There's less money to think about the future, right? So where will this money go? It's not going to go in the banks for sure, right? So where will it go? People will start spending. What will they spend on, right? Obviously, they'll start spending on housing and et cetera, but those are large ticket items, right? But there are smaller ticket items also, right? So which means people will start spending on themselves. And that's when we understood that, yeah, log kharchenge to hai apne upar, to kya banega? Right, so indulgent categories banti hai, right? Kapda banta hai, BPC banta hai, beauty and personal care banta, right? Shoes banta hai. So you know, all these categories start becoming much bigger, and that's how fashion trends are coming in. So it was a direct correlation. And so what we understood was, this was the time when B2C will get built, right? And this is 2017. Nobody had heard of this word called B2C at that time, right? People had started to build brands. Licious was started to get built. Boat was there. Nykaa was there. But these were very small companies. Nobody thought that they will become like unicorns. And because at that time, the concept of unicorns was either some SaaS tech company out of India or maybe a platform, right? Because we'd seen Flipkart and Snapple become unicorns, right? But that's about it. We had no other connotations of what could become unicorns out of a country. And one thing led to other, and the concept that changed to fertility rate, very interesting. So what will happen? People will have lesser kids. Then what about this hormone in our body called oxytocin, right? It's got to be fulfilled, right? Earlier it was getting fulfilled because people were getting married early. People were having kids, right? The hugging, kissing, feeling, all those, ways and means by which one can fulfill oxytocin was there. But now you don't have those, right? So hame laga yaar, this is a good time where the dating as a concept will start becoming bigger. And as we started to understand what Tinder had just entered into the country, right? And we said, are yaar, ye space bhi chala gaya. And it was, well, there's a large company with credibility, we could solve this problem. But interestingly, what we ended up seeing was that the first step is that people go to Tinder. The second step is to fulfill oxytocin is that they start keeping pets, right? And we understood at the end of the day, it's any kind of companionship that people will have. So we knew pets as a category will increase, right? There's no doubt about it. So this is a 2017 piece. What changed at that time was, while at that time we were fairly confident we will be able to run a business, we were not sure how to do a fundraise. That's one aspect we never knew, we had never seen. So interestingly, we went to a few founders, ki batao yaar, ye fundraise kis chidiya ka naam hai, hota kaise, karna kya hota hai, matlab ye, how does this maths work, right? Matlab, what does it need to do dilution and all, right? Ye nahi pata tha, right? So we were meeting a few founders. Interestingly, we met Abhin Vivek at Lishit, who are the best gentlemen I know in the industry. And I've been fortunate enough to work with the likes of Kunal and Rohit at Snapdeal, and Abhin Vivek at Lishit. And I remember, Vivek saying, ki yaar, ye baad mein bana lena. Pehle meet banana. And meet was exactly in that B2C frame that we had built as a framework, right? Yeah, wo to wahi baithta hai, matlab log apne upar paisa kharchna chahenge, they would want product, they would spend more money, and eating was a indulgence, right? So it kind of fit into that framework of indulgence and B2C. And we said, yeah, ye bahut acha idea yaar, ye banate hain.
So one of the things that I'm hearing, Varun, is because we skipped that multiple steps of, multiple large companies being built in offline, online, product, services, we are now heading to a point where the customer is going to want everything on one platform, right? Which also gives you that opportunity to tag the entire sort of addressable market and not just be in, just pet foods or pet services. Because by that set, those segments individually probably are not a large venture-backed business. At the scale that they will be built, right? These are probably good, profitable businesses that can be built with limited capital. But if you want to attack the entire TAM, which is where, the fundraising comes extremely important, and you've gone out and raised, I think the last round was $10 million. This is a good segue to understand, now that when you raised, the market was significantly different, right? versus the market has significantly changed now. There's a lot more focus on profitability as a core concept for these startups, given the fact that the fundraising is not going to be as easy as it was in the last 2 years. It's going to get more difficult. Help me understand the value chain in terms of the pet care market and the various verticals that you play in. And inherently, are the unit economics, like, is this a fairly profitable business from a unit economics perspective? Tell me a little bit about the value chain and the profitability of this entire segment.
Sure. Okay, so let's start from the first thing. When we raised, which was last year around October 2022, it was probably one of the worst times, right? And I'll tell you why. This around March, April was the first time when people started thinking the market is going to go down. The first thing everybody did around May, June was to stop any new investment, right? So we kind of got funded during the time when people had absolutely stopped being investment, saying, let us take it from them, let's understand. And I remember, you know, talking to a lot of funds and they said, you know, why should I invest today? 6 months down the line, I'll get the same thing for one for the valuation, right? So our thesis, then it kind of made sense because, you know, everything was very insulated in 2021. So as we kind of raised money at a very difficult time, but one of the things which everybody told us, which always remains to be true, and it will even by always remain to be true, is a good business is always fundable, right? So and kind of a validation for us that we were building this from very, very large fundamentals. And one of those fundamentals is it has to be profitable. It has to have a clear path of profitability. And if you really ask me, I think the problem comes is when people start getting into vanity metrics. At the end of the day, business is business. It's very simple. How much money you have to pay for a customer? And what will you get from that customer? You will be able to repay that money. There is nothing else in it. Everything else around it is a vanity metric, right? You start finding a cohort of people which kind of are profitable, but they are only 20% of your cohort. You can't argue with anyone saying, tomorrow I will only find this type of people who are like this 20% of cohorts. That's never going to matter, right? So a couple of things which you said. First of all, there was never a different internal metric or an external metric. Every metric was the same, right? So I'll come to unit economics, right? And, you know, obviously, you know, we're not going to discuss line by line, but large level pay, you know, fundamentals remain the same. Sare metrics, we here. The way to solve this, and this is at least we feel good about the fact that our focus on this was from day zero. Right? It never came that there will be some problem to be solved at the end. So the first rule is there is no vanity metric in this. This is as plain business as any other business, right? You know, you can't justify anything by DAOs or BAOs or future growth or future larger numbers. The second is, one has to be very clear as to what are the metrics that get better by scale and what don't get better by scale. And I'll give you one example. You look at any business model, and some of them I had also seen in the past, that CAC as a metric kind of always improve, right? But in reality, if you look at the you know, the real numbers for some of these companies in the past, and we looked at quite a few, CAC only optimized till some time, and after that, it kind of either remains stable or it increased. If that was the reality, then that is also the reality that you will face as a company. Never have we, in any business model, reduced CAC from the number that we have, right? So there are some mathematical, I would say, transitions. Okay, your business in repeat will go up, and hence your CAC will come down because retention CAC might be lower than your new customer CAC. All that is fine. But do not forget that for you, as you grow, a new customer acquisition is also going to get more expensive. So to that end as well, right? I mean, it's a reality. There are no, right? Within absolutely nothing, but you know where this, you know, where this can happen. So you know, that's one metric. Supply chain is a metric. It's very important, right? I mean, it's very easy to say supply chain at the larger scale will become half. The question is, why will it become half? Right, there are a few known places where it reduces, but, you know, for example, you can optimize on it, you know, wastage, expiry, some of those things. Well, What are the other parameters where you will, make it better? Because there are quite a few costs which will also go up because of inflation, right? Whether you're looking at a business model for 3 years, 5 years down the line, and we forget inflation, right? So put it in, like, it's very easy to say my EOA will increase because I'll increase the office. How will it increase and why will the customer appetite pattern change, right? I can understand a repeat customer might increase it, but why will a new customer increase, right? So now I'm not put that in a clear-cut manual, right? And start working on those. And one of the things that we've always learned is that the first set of customers are more loyal. So, you know, and this whole, the North Star metric for every company is repeat, right? So it's very easy to say, yaar, aaj repeat X hai, kal bhi hai, X plus Y ho jayega, right? But wo plus kahan se aayega? What is the lever that anybody has to increase that to Y, right? And it will happen because, yes, you will put a disproportionate effort on it, but has it happened till now? And have you seen other companies where it has happened? And so I think those are some of the first principle thinking that needs to be done. And if at the end of it, in a steady state, you see some of those metrics which everybody talks about, LTV to CAC, absolutely important, right? Matlab, aap recover kar pa rahe ho, your cost of customer acquisition is a very important metric. Or you see, is that really happening? Is it happening in 3 years? And the answer is no, your business will never be viable. Right? Is it happening in 1 year? Great. Right? Is it happening in 3 months? Well, not seen too many companies where it happened in 3 months, especially for maybe businesses, marketplaces like we are. But if it's happening, then great. Then you can actually go and spend a lot of money. And the last part I always, as a fundamental we've talked about is, when do you do for growth? You do growth. You spend money to get a new customer where you're confident that this customer that you're getting in is actually going to, you know, give you some money, right? That cannot be a question, problem statement that is going to happen 2 years down the line. Yaar, abhi to sirf number dikhane ke liye karte, but aaj ye naye customer aane wale, ye retain nahi hoga. Retain karna hai. Agar retain nahi ho raha, to fir aap naye customer nahi leke aate. Pehle jo customer aa rahe hain, unko retain karte hain. Jo mere paas customer base hai, usko retain karte hain. Otherwise, there is no business model. There is no real PMF, right? And that's, well, underlying thesis of, I think, any good quality company, right? Gone are the days, at least for the next couple of years, for sure. People are going to, you know, scrutinize this under a microscope as to every assumption that has been taken of why your business will be profitable. There were funds we were just, you know, talking to just generally, and they were talking about if you are not CM2 positive, which is basically all your operational costs and then all your digital marketing efforts, we're not even looking at those companies, right? And now this is a very large stock change from 2 years ago, right? So if a company was there 2 years ago, they were chasing very different. They were chasing growth, they were chasing acquisition, they were chasing some of those numbers. And today, they have to chase their profit. I mean, that has become a hygiene. If you're not profitable there, then people are not even going to look at it. Nobody's going to look at any of them. Yes, it's a stark change. The right way probably is that profitability, I mean, what is the reason that a company exists? It has to give money back to shareholders. So that's the first rule, and all the rules come later. So that fundamental should not go. I think every kahani starts off. So unit economics, etc., all those, I mean, just to give you a little bit of understanding on this category, fundamentally, the gross margins are quite healthy in this category. They're upwards of around somewhere between 35% to 40%, right? And because you start with the healthy gross margins there, it becomes an optimization game below it, right? So, sara optimization game, be supply chain. So then it's like what we normally call as the Indigo theory, right? The way Indigo said, I will optimize every cost to make the airline profitable. It's fundamentally the same. Right, we kind of just go after every cost and solve for it, because cost margin are never going to expand nightly increase. It's only your cost which can be optimized.
Interesting. Is the online sort of model that you are running, the marketplace model, where the different product providers, the manufacturers of the product, directly sell to you and you sell to the consumer, or Are you sort of the middleman that matches the consumer and the product manufacturer, and then they service that order directly?
So one is an inventory model, other drop ship model, right? So we kind of do both, right? Basis product categories, right? The idea today is to manage good customer experience, right? So almost 65-67% of our orders in Delhi, Bangalore, and Bombay get delivered in 24 hours, right? We built a very robust supply chain to do to make that happen. You know, if somebody are ordering before 3 p.m., they get the order the same day. To make that happen, we need to pull the inventory, right? So we do that. So, and this category also has some competitions of faster delivery, right? So that, and with a larger assortment, we're able to solve that problem much better than any other player in the market. We kind of run both the models on this as of today.
Just one point on the profitability. I think what you said about the focus on profitability probably helps the entrepreneurs now, because there's no external pressure to show growth, unsustainable growth as such, right? Because a lot of these founders, especially first-time founders, right? You were slightly different because you had seen two companies grow significantly from the startup mode to becoming a large company. But first-time founders have no other metric than the external, you know, investors saying that, hey, you need to grow to raise the next round. And then in the last few years, that's what's happened, right? Because you got a lot of people burning money on CAC where they probably knew, because the founders probably know, this is never going to be profitable. But at this point in time, I need to show the top line growth to get the next round. So in overall, I think this whole change towards profitability, and we were having this call, earlier, where you said it's probably gone too far. It's gone to the other extreme where everything needs to be profitable already. But that's also because, you know, the last few years we were on the other extreme of growth without worrying about profitability or, you know, unit economics at all. So I think net, it probably helps the founders build more sustainable companies. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, Varun, is this is a topic that I'm personally very interested in, is the export potential of products and services from India. And I want to understand, one, the pet care market in India itself, a lot of it satisfied by Indian manufactured products, or are we still importing a lot? And if we are, can that be sort of substituted with Indian products, and is there export potential? So a large question, but let's start at the market size, what it is domestically, and how much of it that is satisfied by, you know, the domestic products versus international products.
This is something that we are also very kicked about. You know, like any other space, first demand kind of comes in, right? So there is an, you know, organic demand which starts building and which has started to happen in this segment as well. So there's an estimated $1 billion of pet care market, organized pet care market in the country today. What our understanding is almost, you know, 50-odd% of this comes from imported products and 50% of this is domestic product, right? So there are large companies which are now built in India, which are kind of manufacturing. Mars has a few factories in India for some of their brands. For some of the brands, they still import, right? The good thing is that, you know, at the end of the day, the two types of things that are going to happen. One is large companies from outside will start coming in and exploring India as a market, right? There are big brands across the globe. And over time, they will start building their factories in the country because they will know it will always be more viable to produce in the country. But for that, they need volumes, right? So once they hit those volumes, obviously, they'll start producing in the country. The second which will happen, which is very important, is that Indian companies will start realizing, hey, there is a scope of arbitrage because, well, you know, I can create a better product in the country, right? And at a lower price because I don't have to import, right? And I will be able to give it to the Indian customers, right? Now, some of these companies will also move into a third, you know, part of the ecosystem where they will say, I will start exporting as, right? Because I've created a very high quality product at a very competitive price. And I will start ensuring that people across the globe start appreciating Indian products as well. So these are three large things that will happen in the country. The good part is that in the last 1 year, the amount of, I would say coverage that pet care has got as a segment, a lot of people are now starting to create their products. You know, every few months, there are newer pet care manufacturers who are kind of starting to build in the country, right? And that's really good news. There are a couple of large exporters from India, like Doxy Chew, who, you know, has a large part of the business comes out from outside of the country. And So all of this is practically good news. In fact, as a platform, we also saw this as an opportunity. In fact, one of our early business ideas was to build a D2C brand in the country. See, we have to understand, like food is largely meat, right? And almost 70 to 80% meat. And that's a core ingredient. And we come from delicious background. We understood meat, right? So we said, yeah, ek D2C brand banate. And that's what we've exactly done. We built a brand called Endo, which is manufactured in our own factories in Bangalore as of now. And the idea is that hopefully in the future, in a couple of years down the line, we should kind of, take that product across the world as well. Why just India, right? It's a nearly high quality product built for India, and India has different problems. Yeah. But you go to any pet parent and they will say they hate the smell of pet food. Pet food should not smell. It smells because it's been the same all across, right? And people have been used to in Western countries. Why should Indians go through that thinking, yeah, maybe a smelling pet food is okay for me? It should not be, right? There needs to be change in the ingredient. There needs to be change in the process. The process which existed 50 years ago is the same process in pet food manufacturing which exists today, right? And that's not fair, right? So we need to change that. And that's what I think a lot of other companies and entrepreneurs will start thinking as well. And it's a very, very right space for innovation.
Interesting. So from what I understand, you're saying demand as the demand gets built, so will the domestic sort of capacity for it. There's nothing stopping it. There's no technology barrier or anything stopping it, right? It's just capital and demand. Once put into it, you can produce a lot of these products in-house that are currently being imported.
Absolutely. Do we have the right set of ingredients? And the answer is yes. Right. We have high quality meat available. We have high quality, other ingredients which are available, right? And if some of them have to be imported tomorrow, we can start manufacturing those in the country as well. So yes, we have everything required to kind of build a high quality product in the country. There's nothing which is stopping us.
Interesting. Got it. Okay. Varun, I want to switch gears now and talk about something that you mentioned a few minutes ago, the focus on customer experience, right? From what I understand, that's the make or break for a brand like yours or any consumer brand, right? If you get the customer experience right, you get most of it right. And since you're looking at that, spearheading that at Supertails, I want to understand what kind of frameworks do you use? How do you think about customer experience? How do you define it for a layman?
Yeah. Honestly, a lot has been talked about on customer experience generally, and everybody talks about it, right? What we have, for all the companies that I worked, one of the very interesting cases that I saw was at Yashid, where probably they, as a company, walked the talk when they said customer experience means something to me, they walked the talk, right? And what I personally realized was a very disciplined path, right? Customer experience, it's like honesty, right? But like, you ask somebody, are you honest? Obviously, I'm always honest, right? But like, what is the thin line between a white lie and honesty? When do you start justifying it is for greater good than I have to lie, right? And customer experience is very, very similar. When do you start justifying here in cost feedback, right? When do you start justifying here in business model? When you start justifying here, customer, right? Because these are things which are very easy for you. These are all self-fulfilling biases. The other struggle that we've always seen is that customer experiences run like a function, and then it's somebody problem statement, and is the person who's making the product, usse bologe aap customer experience sochte ho, obviously that is my first thing that I think, but the product banta hai to maine nahi socha, because product jab banta hai to main sochta conversion banana tha. Jab main, whenever I do something, I'm looking at my metric, and customer experience is everybody's metric and it's nobody's metric, right? So that's where I probably start getting lost. And it's a very big problem statement to be aware. I don't think you've cracked it. I don't think many companies have cracked it. The few things that we know and I would like to share is that it just starts from the top, right? There is, you don't have to build departments. You don't have to make some person responsible for it. You don't have to chase metrics daily. The thing that everybody is expected to chase is that, just build it part of the culture. And how do you build anything part of the culture when it's done top down, right? So from as founder, I think it's your responsibility to question everything on customer experience, and it will take a year. And after a year, people will start appreciating that track, they will start asking the question. It's a very slow change, right? So that's point number one. The point number two is, what is customer experience? And, you know, I think the best is, there are some really good books on it. How Zappos talks about it. So many companies, Chewy as a company, talks about it a lot. But fundamentally, I think customer experience comes to, you know, the two parts to it. One is the customer issue solve karna, which is, you know, is an issue resolution. And the second is customer delight, which is customer practically did not expect it and you're just making them happy, right? And that is largely played on the emotions of the customer, right? So customer experiences when the catharsis that happens in the customer's mind, you're able to, do exactly what probably they did not desire, right? So unki need to fulfill kar rahe, unki want bhi fulfill karte, unki desire bhi karte ho, but this is actually not very difficult, right? The best way we kind of try to solve it is just put them yourself in the shoes. Say, as a customer, what would you like? This will solve a problem statement for customers and for let's say, what part of the cohort. Then this is the same question that you start repeating with different sets of people. And one by one, you'll surely start having some answers. I would also add, there's a whole 7-point framework, which, there's a really good book, I think it was on Zappos, which talks about a 7-point framework on customer experience, right? People started by awareness, and then they ended by being your advocate, right? So this is a whole seven step process of what goes in the mind of the customer when they start liking you as a brand. What is customer love? I can't say customers love us, right? But what does it mean? So usko beech mein ghusna hai aur usi ko brand se reinforce karna hai, and then everybody in the company does the same thing. Aur wo sawal puchna ki yaar, jo humne ab tak build kiya, any new thing that we're building, does it become better? Does it remain equal, or does it deteriorate? Anything where, and our golden rule is, anything which keeps the customer experience 97% is okay to launch. Anything which goes below 97% should not be launched. Obviously, anything which increases it should always be launched, right? So it's very easy. Yeah, my customer experience, but this will increase 10%. So for example, from tomorrow, I will make deliveries faster by 10%. So my customer experience will go up by, let's say, 2-3%, right? So yes, that's absolutely a goal. But if tomorrow I'm shutting down a warehouse and my customer experience is going to get bad by 20%, then that's a no-go, right? So when you kind of bring that perspective onto customer experience, that kind of works quite well. And how do you just quantify it? It's just over time. You start somewhere, over time, you look at the real numbers and start saying, hi, is the impact okay? Right? So longish answer, but, right? It's still first principle. It's still mathematical to some extent, and still, frameworks which exist, right? So do not go and start building first principle thinking on customer experience. I think there is enough and more literature outside. Just go and read some of those books. It's very, very powerful.
Interesting. The challenge with customer experience, I would imagine, is, as you said, it's top down. It sort of needs to be part of the culture itself, where everybody's thinking about it, because every single person in the team eventually impacts the customer experience in some way or form. And unfortunately, it's not a simple mathematical equation ki kya kitna hai, lifetime value itni hai, isiliye profitability itni rahegi, right? It's still a vague sort of number, subjective sometimes, objective some other times. So as you said, warehouse close kiya to kya impact aayega. And it seems like a continuously changing problem that needs to be solved for, right? Like, it's not something that said that you can do once a year, saying that, hey, this is the customer experience month, we focus on customer experience, and then, we focus on other metrics of the business later point in time. It just feels like something that needs to be reinforced every day of the week in order to build that culture where, where this becomes second nature. And Zappos talks about, how their customer experience, when you call their customer support, it genuinely feels like you're talking to somebody who wants to help you, a friend who wants to help you, rather than, the typical customer support that, the stereotypical customer support, which is, it's a harassment to sort of just talk to them, get something done. Yeah, it's a It's a difficult problem to solve on a continuous basis.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Totally true. I think it has to be part of the culture. Then only then it becomes a very everyday problem statement. And you rightly said, Siddharth, it can't be done once in a year or, you know, once in a quarter. It's an everyday problem statement to solve.
Varun, one of the things that we were discussing prior to this, right, is you've come from a background where, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you started something and that venture never took off. It failed. And from there on, you've gone on to work at HUL, Snapdeal, Dishes, and now this. One of the important sort of elements in any founder's journey or in general, if you want to make it big in your career, is the importance of failure. And how do you sort of take that into your stride? How do you move on from it? Tell me a little bit about the importance of failure as it has played a role in your career specifically. And, you know, now that you've seen, you know, worked at many startups, started up on your own. What do you think the importance of failure from a founder perspective? How important is failure?
Let's try to break it down. You know, let's imagine a problem statement. And now there are two ways to solving it. One is, do you increase the probability of success that this thing works, or do you reduce the probability of this thing failing, right? These are two approaches that people normally take, right? And what does it actually mean? Let's say there's a problem statement. You come up with a hypothesis, ye karte, and what you will see, there's one set of people who will say, you know, ye isle nahi chalega. And then there is another set of people who will say, isle chalega. Worry is le chalega, right? And I, you know, while these are, this, you know, they seem to be very simple things, but honestly, I believe this is the biggest difference between, you know, the thought processes, right? The biggest difference thought process is that, you know, and I always felt this is also a large company versus a small company thing. In a larger company, you kind of go towards the success by reducing your points of failures. In a smaller company, you go towards success by increasing your probability of succeeding, and you don't care about the number of failures it took for you to reach there, right? The way, at least, we have looked as a company, and I think it's true for so many startups, is failure should be actually, you know, celebrated, right? Because that's one more thing, you know, what should not be done, right? And it's not just learning for you, it's a learning for so many people who are going to come, who are around you and who are going to come in the future as well. So the way one should think about failure, you know, so it's actually, how do you solve a problem? You take a problem, and especially at a very young stage as a startup, you know, the idea is have enough and more bias for action to execute it. The only question that you need to think is, does it come as part of your business model? Does it come, which means profitability? And second, does it hamper your customer experience? So the answer is not, just try it out. If it's not a success, it's absolutely fine. Tweak it, change it, scrap it, and move on. Now, where does this fail? It only fails on one part, especially in a younger startup, is when it becomes very difficult for one to accept that it can fail, which means you will try multiple new things to make it work. You know, as a founder, sometimes you are not ready to give up and say, hey, now I'm sure it will not work. Let me find a different method, right? It's also a self-fulfilling bias. Nahi yaar, mera idea hai chalega. Mujhe pata hai chalega, right? And at that time, it's very important to keep data in perspective. Incremental changes are not going to work. Exponential changes are going to work, which means if it's not working, if the data shows it doesn't work, scrap it and move on. Try a new thing. Trust me, you'll have a higher chance of succeeding if you move and find a newer idea. So yeah, the idea of, and I think today's founders are very, very smart. All entrepreneurs are very smart. They understand the, you know, key, to some extent, it is going to be brute force. You will have to have 10 ideas on the table. They will know 8 out of them are not going to work. And if somebody doesn't believe in it, if somebody's still going for one idea and that one idea should work, right, I think it's going to be difficult, or it's going to be a large luck, or one has to be like a fantabulous founder as well. But, you know, one of the examples, with even at a large company, is, you know, one what I've started to see recently is that Elon Musk, on Twitter, right? He tweets that, and people say, hey, there is this whole algorithm which is kind of not working. And I've seen some of the tweets where he says, hey, it was actually a very screwed up idea to do this. It has been reverted back. And you know, imagine all of that in a large company like Twitter happened within 2 days. And so what's stopping companies which are smaller, right? Here, by the way, I'm not advocating, you know, Elon Musk or Twitter or whatever they're doing there. But I'm just advocating the thought process, which is that, hey, we tried something, even in a large company like Twitter, right? It did not work. The data showed that it does not work. There are reverse screw-ups in those ideas. And it's fine. We've reverted back. Now we're going to think of a new way to solving the same problem, right? And that's what failure is. If accepted, in case of Elon, he accepted it. I remember sharing that tweet with everyone in my team and saying, hey, look, they're celebrating failures. But it's a big deal. He would have gotten so much love because he accepted the fact that failure. And there's nothing wrong with it. It'll be wrong with the deal. So as a company, I think that's the biggest thing. Celebrate failures. And that doesn't mean just do it a lot. Try to minimize or decrease the success of, increase the probability of success. Right? So, but don't fear failure. It's fine. Don't build a culture where people start fearing failures, right? Let them try. It's okay.
Yeah. Especially as you said, in a startup where a lot of things are not clear, even the founders not necessarily have that much of an insight key. This is what's going to work or this is not going to work. They obviously have some insight given their prior experiences, but a lot of things are new. And unless you try without having that fear of failure and, you know, communicating that to the team that it's okay to try and fail, we'll learn from it and we'll try again. It's really hard to find the truth per se. The other thing that I've realized in my entrepreneurial journey, right, when I was an employee, it was more about, will the company work or not? Like, will the idea be successful or not? But as I've started up, I've realized it's less of that. The fear is on a day-to-day basis, right? Like that you need to get over that fear on a day-to-day basis because there are so many small ideas that you experiment with and you sort of as a founder put it on yourself that, hey, if this doesn't work, the team is going to think, you know, the founder is not good enough. But that's not the truth. Everybody understands that small little experiments will fail. We'll learn from it. We'll move on. And that's the culture that needs to be built. That was a big surprise for me. I had never, you know, as an outsider who never started up, it was always about will the idea work or not. I realized that it's more day-to-day failures that you need to take into your stride and sort of make it work rather than the big picture failures that you worry about.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Rose karna, rose idea generation. Every day there are experiments and every day experiments are bound to fail. I mean, one of the good things that we're doing in this company, and I'm kind of honest, very proud of it, is that we term everything as an experiment. So people don't build a fear of failure, right? So somebody can say, yeah, I'm running an experiment, right? And so, you know, experiments fail, right? That's something as a kid also, you know, experiment, right? So the experiments are bound to fail, right? So when you term something as an experiment, right? And so, in every meeting, we have this, what are the three experiments you're going to run this week, right? And which of this experiment worked and which of, just what of this is the way it's communicated, right? So smaller thing, then we also run it from somewhere that don't call it idea generation, call it experiment, because idea generation, people are more closer to experiments. People are okay in failing, right? So because that's the connotation of an experiment and it kind of worked for us, right? So now people don't mind failing, right? And there have been times and thus experiment run it, thus to the right? Or khush hai, right? Ki yaar, baaki sab teen teen experiment kiye, humne 10 kiye. I think the win was that we were able to churn out 10. Not the 10, all 10 of them failed. Fine. You know, 10 are things that won't work.
Yeah. I think I came across this or I read this somewhere. People don't fail, experiments do, right? As soon as you detach that those two things, people get comfortable with the fact that, hey, it's the experiment failing. It's not you as a person who's failing. And that gives them a lot of comfort. It'll be a good point to ask you this, right? Obviously, entrepreneurial journeys are never easy, given, you know, even though you had a lot of experience at Licious, Snapdeal, I'm sure Supertails, you made some, you had some failures along the way. If you could share something with our audience that, you know, specific instance where that failure happened and how did you sort of move on from it and how did you learn from it, that'll be extremely helpful.
Absolutely. I mean, there are millions every day. Let me just think of some very relevant ones. Okay, so one very interesting one, which actually we started with was, you know, when we were thinking about veterinary as a service, and we thought, how does it integrate very well with the Indian ecosystem? So the first thing we understood was that there were around 80,000 vets in the country. 90% of them were for livestock, which is cows, buffaloes, and poultry, which leaves 7,000 to 8,000 vets, and there are 25,000 pin codes in the country. So we knew that, you know, the ratio per pin code was very low, right? Accessibility to vet was low. We were very, very bullish on the fact that veterinary as an ecosystem will work, right? And, you know, we kind of, I would say we did not treat that as an experiment. We kind of treated that as a business model, saying, hey, I will acquire customers for veterinary service and they will come on my platform and then they will buy every other thing in the world. It was always easier to acquire a customer from for the veterinary channel because the tags there were lower. Interestingly, even knowing one element, we kind of did not think on it. And the element was that only, you know, 7 to 8% of Indians give packaged food to their pets, right? Most of the others give table scraps or home cooked food, right? And largely table scraps. So penetration of packaged food was much higher. Much lower, but penetration of requirement of vets was still much higher, right? Even if I give home cooked food, I still go to the vet, right? And, you know, interestingly, our thesis failed. It was just the first 2 months when we started, right? And we felt, yeah, we'll acquire customers from, you know, the vets. Then they will come and buy products. And what we saw that the, you know, people who were very happy with the consultation and they said, yeah, Machadia, I don't have to go to a vet. And we're super happy. Everything was picture perfect. But when we asked them, Kharidlo, they never bought, right? And it took us 2 months and we knew the answer, but we kind of started, you know, and that's where the problem is. Sometimes you've got to leave your idea and move on, right? And we kind of, at least for the next 2 months, we tried multiple ways of increasing that number, But the inevitable always hits you back that these customers were not giving packaged food, they're never going to buy, right? That mathematically was never going to happen, right? And so this is an example of something which was very easy to solve in 7 days or 10 days, but it took us 2 months to solve for it. And obviously we solved it very beautifully after that, where we said, you know, for anybody who buys product from, let's acquire from product, and anybody who buys product from our platform, we will also give them, you know, veterinary consultation and unki requirement to 100% hogi, right? While the opposite of that was not true. And this kind of worked very, very beautifully for us. Right. But again, it's the power of experiment. If on day zero, we would have thought, yeah, rather than coming with a conviction, let me try this an experiment. Let me work 15 days on a smaller cohort, see what happens. Why will it not happen? You know, sometimes we feel very happy it was just 2 months, because if you would have led this for 1 year, you would have spent a lot of money on doing this, right? And it would have not led to a faster PMF that we eventually did, right? So just one example of why it's important to have failures. And the quicker you know, the quicker data, just leave it and move on. That is, if the data shows you are 20-30% off the desired results, or maybe even more, in this case, we were even more, incremental changes are not going to solve for it. It has to be very, very big, large change. Incremental changes can make the thing better than 5%, 7-8%, not more than that.
Interesting. I have a follow-on question to not from a failure perspective, but now that you mentioned the fact that a lot of people give a certain kind of food, I'm assuming there's overall, there's a lot of education that's required in the market on why some things are good for your pets and not good for your pet. Is content a big play in this industry? Is that something that you guys think is a big sort of needle mover over the long run?
The stage of the industry that we are, education, I would say, is the biggest requirement for every pet parent. We also believe that anybody who is going to crack education for the pet parent is also going to crack pet care. unfortunately, it has to be along with the business, right? It can't be just education. It has to be along a business model, right? And the way we are solving for it is we're saying, hey, we need to delineate both of these. A lot of people have tried content and then commerce built on that content. We feel here is to thoda this, you know, thoda alag alag karke solve karna padega aur solve waise hi karte hain. Mera ab mera pet parent hai, and that, you know, so there are two set of people: people who have not bought from me, and people who have bought from me, right? People who have not bought from me but they know me. Let's think of those as a customer. I need to create a forum where they get the information that they desire, right? Unke liye kya karte hain? Everybody talks about Instagram as a community. I think we have leveraged it in a little bit different manner. We have almost 75,000 followers on Instagram, 100% organic. We don't spend money on Instagram. The only difference is that we don't talk about super deals. We only talk about pet care, right? So there will be posts on, you know, it's very interesting. Like Homi is an example, right? You know, everybody has a post on Homi says, "Don't color your dogs," right? But my question is, you know, all of us have pets. Yeah, hum bhi chahte unko tika lagana. Hum bhi chahte unko thoda sa range, right? Is it possible that if today we are so much careful about organic, you know, colors, is there something which can be made available for pets as well? Can just thoda bahut color lagana, photograph khichni, and you know, make the whole community feeling becomes better with a pet? How do I do that? Our post will only talk about how can you make, you know, colors for your pets as well, which is, you know, vetted by our, you know, internal vets, and they will say that yes, this will work and there will be no harm to the pets at all, right? And so we will keep talking only and only about a lot of pet care stuff without talking about Super Tails as a platform. Let's choose, and then you figure out Quora is a very important platform, right? So let's choose that as a platform. We have almost 3,000 to 4,000 questions that we've answered there. We have more than a couple of million views where people come and see and read our answers. We don't do it under, you know, talking about Super Tails. We only talk about, hey, this is a problem statement. Let's give the best possible answer so that this person problem gets solved, right? And obviously in the future, so many more people will have similar question, and that they, right? So a lot of companies will say, hey, is your SEO becoming better than this, right? Fair point. Well, the answer is no. We're not solving for that. We're actually solving for the consumer. I'd solve a life problem. So what education solve karna? The second part is a customer who's buying from me. I have so much more information about that customer. I have the phone number. I can reach out to them. And so we have this concept called of a pet relationship buddy, right? And who's this buddy? Somebody who's had pet for a long time. You know, they call the customer, let's just say Siddharth made the purchase on our platform. You know, Varun is their buddy. I call you. They say, hey, look, I start having conversation. What's the name of your pet, etc. And so, the idea is that I got to handhold you because I know you have a lot of pets. Now, if Siddharth says, hey, this is my third pet, I know you don't have too many, right? But it's the same thing. It's your first pet and you say, well, you know what? My dog isn't eating rightly. And I'll ask you a question, why do you think so? And if you think it's a difficult problem or it's a real problem, I will connect you to a vet directly then and there. Let's just solve your problem here and move on. The problem here, solve it. It can be anything. My dog scratches the whole place. My dog doesn't know where to poop. And these are solvable problems, right? And so this education is very important. Now, first of all, you need to know this is a problem. Second, you need to know it can be solved. And third, you need to know I have a solution, right? Now, those three things that you get, then you say, yeah, education bhi ho gaya, solve bhi ho gaya, and it's fine. Can I, you know, it said I can't give grapes to my dog. Why is that, right? My dog ate two grapes because they were lying on the ground. Is my dog going to die, right? What should I do if that happens, right? Now, it's a small question that you don't have an answer because on Google, everything is cancer at the end of the day or fatal, right? So, you know, there are extremes and you don't know which one to choose, which part of the spectrum is your dog in right now, right? What you need is a clear answer. Hey, this is an emergency, you need to go there, or chill back and relax. Nothing is going to happen. Wait and watch. Next 2 hours are critical. If nothing happens, everything is fine, right? Don't worry on it. Nothing will happen. right? So this education is important. So like I said, for people who are our customers, there's a different thing we follow. For people who are not our customers, we kind of do a lot of things for the community to help solve education for them on Instagram, on Quora, on LinkedIn, on Facebook. So that are these places where community can be built. So it's an idea of SuperDel basically.
Interesting. I think that's what eventually builds the long-term trust, right? That these people are not here to just upsell or cross-sell or whatnot. They're here to actually solve my problem through good content.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Varun, this has been a fantastic conversation about the pet care market in India, how you decided to start SuperDel. It's been a fantastic journey already, and I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for being so candid with, you know, everything that you've experienced and sharing it with our audience.
Thank you, Siddharth. It was always an absolute pleasure talking to you on pet care. I mean, it's a favorite subject right now, so obviously I love talking about it. And thanks for all the listeners who are listening to this podcast.
Perfect. So what I'm going to do, Varun, if people want to reach out to you for any roles or anything pet related, I'm just going to link your email in the show notes and they can reach out to you on email. Does that work?
Perfect. Perfect.
Perfect. Sounds good. Beep.